Let's start. For the record, it's 10 o'clock a.m. Mountain Time, 11 o'clock Central, October 10, 2011. This is the time and place scheduled in the Belfield City Hall in Belfield, North Dakota, for the administrative hearing in the matter of the siting application of Whiting Oil and Gas Corporation. In August of this year, the Office of Administrative Hearings received a request from the Public Service Commission to provide an administrative law judge to preside as substantive hearing officer in this matter. For the record, my name's Alan Hoberg. I'm the duly designated administrative law judge. I'll take appearances from the parties at this time, starting with you, Mr. Morrison, please.
And I'm John Morrison, attorney with Carly Fleck in Bismarck, appearing on behalf of the applicant, Whiting Oil and Gas Corporation.
Thank you, Mr. Morrison. Who do you have at the table with you, please?
And with me is Nicole Thibault, who will be one of the witnesses, and Bill Regan, who will be your other witness this morning.
Thank you. Mr. Armstrong, please.
Mitch Armstrong, Special Assistant Attorney General on behalf of the Public Service Commission. With me is Public Utility Analyst Patrick Fine. I move Mr. Fine be allowed to ask questions at the hearing today.
That's granted. And up at the front with me also is Public Service Commission staff person Chris Marl. All right, thank you all. There's no interveners in this matter today, at least I have none on the record, and I believe there's no one here present to either present testimony either for or against, other than Ms. Baumgartner from the Dickinson Press. I believe everybody is with Whiting Oil and Gas other than the Public Service Commission staff. Is that correct, Mr. Morrison?
Yes, it is.
All right. Thank you. Just briefly as to how we got here today, on July 11th of 2011, Whiting Oil and Gas Corporation filed an application for a certificate of corridor compatibility and an application for a route permit to authorize the construction and operation of 6.8 miles of 8-inch crude oil pipeline located 6 miles northeast of Belfield in Billings and Stark County, North Dakota, and the project was shown on a map attached to the application. Whiting also filed an application for waivers of procedures and time schedules, including procedures that require separate filings of applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility and a route permit, procedures that require separate notices of such applications, procedures that require separate hearings on such applications. The commission found the applications were complete. On August 30th, 2011, a notice of filings and notice of hearing was issued scheduling today's hearing. The issues to be considering in Whiting's application for waivers of procedures and time schedules at today's hearing are, first, are the proposed facilities of such length, design, location, or purpose that they will produce minimal adverse effects and that adherence to applicable procedures and time schedules may be waived? Secondly, is it appropriate for the commission to waive any procedures and time schedules as requested in the application? The issues to be considered in Whiting's applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit are, first, will the location, construction, and operation of the proposed facilities produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and upon the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota? Second, are the proposed facilities compatible with the environmental preservation and the efficient use of resources? And third, will the proposed facility locations minimize adverse human and environmental impact while ensuring continuing system reliability and integrity and ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion? Here's the hearing procedure we'll follow in this matter today. The applicant will present its case for granting of its applications. Mr. Morrison has indicated that he has two witnesses. He'll direct questions to them, and he'll undoubtedly offer some documents as evidence in this matter. Each of the witnesses will be subject to questioning by commission staff and myself. Then I'll allow such further questions from Mr. Morrison and commission staff and myself as may be necessary. So we'll take those two witnesses. We have no interveners and no one else from the public presenting information today. So at the close of the evidentiary portion presented by Whiting Oil and Gas, we'll talk about closing this matter. And you've marked your documentary evidence, and you have how many exhibits, Mr. Morrison?
We have five.
All right, thank you. No decision will be reached on this matter today. The proceedings are being recorded. They'll be reviewed by me later, and I'll, sometime after this hearing, issue recommended findings of fact and conclusions of law and a recommendation to the Public Service Commission as to whether the application should be granted or denied or as to other appropriate administrative action. The Commission may accept, reject, or modify my recommendation. A party not agreeing with the final decision of the Public Service Commission may have appeal rights or other rights under the Administrative Agencies Practice Act in North Dakota, Chapter 2832, and under the rules of the Commission found in North Dakota Administrative Code, Article 6902. The burden of proof today is on the applicant to show by the greater weight of the evidence or the preponderance of the evidence that it is entitled to a grant of the applications it is seeking. Any questions about the procedures today, Mr. Morrison?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Armstrong?
No, Your Honor.
All right, did you want to begin with an opening, Mr. Morrison?
Just very briefly, we would like to thank the Commission staff and yourself for being here today and for working with us to move the hearing date up. We do appreciate the consideration, and we'll try to make this matter brief, and we are going to ask for an order to be signed as soon as possible to allow construction to begin. With that, as you indicated, we have two witnesses, and Nicole Thibault will be the first witness.
All right, I think I'll swear in both witnesses at this time. And as you know, I'm required by law to tell all witnesses at administrative hearings that the maximum penalty for perjury in this state is a Class C felony, punishable by a maximum 5 years imprisonment, $5,000 fine, or both. And of course, perjury is essentially not telling the truth at a hearing such as this. Being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter being heard? If so, answer I do. Ms. Thibault?
I do.
Thank you. And Mr. Reagan?
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Morrison, please.
Thank you. Ms. Thibault, do you want to move up to the witness stand? And Nicole, would you state your name for the record, spell your last name, and also give us your business address?
My name is Nicole Thibault. My last name is spelled T as in Tom, E, B as in boy, O-W. And my business address is 1700 Broadway, Suite 2300, Denver, Colorado, 80290.
And can you tell us by whom you're employed and in what capacity?
Whiting Petroleum Corporation, and I am the pipeline compliance specialist for the company.
And Whiting Oil and Gas Corporation is an affiliate of Whiting Petroleum, is that correct?
Correct.
And can you give us a little bit of your background? Tell us about your post-high school education and a brief summation of your work history since then.
Yes. I acquired a bachelor's from CU Boulder in 1998 in environmental policy. And once I graduated, I went to work for an environmental engineering consulting firm for about 6 years. In that time, I did soil, groundwater remediation, phase one site assessments, and pipeline compliance consulting. And when I left that company, I came to Whiting. I originally started at Whiting doing air quality, and pretty quickly after that, it was determined that we needed a pipeline compliance person at Whiting, and so I filled that role.
And the pipeline that we're discussing today, that's a 6.8-mile, 8-inch diameter pipeline from Stark and Billings County, North Dakota, is one of your pipelines that you have responsibility for in the company?
That's correct.
And can you maybe just give the commission staff a little background as to the purpose of this pipeline, what it's going to be built for, and what it's intended to do?
Yes. This pipeline is intended to transport oil that Whiting produces in our Pronghorn field, transport it to a sales location where we tie in with Bridger Lake Pipeline. And from there, we can reach three markets in Guernsey, Wyoming, Clearbrook, Minnesota, and the Mandan Refinery.
You made reference to Pronghorn Field. That's a name that Whiting uses for its production area in Bell Field and some in Stark County. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
And can you describe generally the pipeline that you're proposing to install?
The pipeline is approximately 6.8 miles, 8 inches in diameter. It will be a steel line with a fusion epoxy coating.
Will there be any block valves or other surface facilities associated with this pipeline?
There will not be any block valves. The only surface facility associated with this pipeline is going to be a fiber optic tie-in box.
Otherwise, you'll have valves at the beginning and the end of the line, but nothing in between. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And will there be any kind of telemetry or sensors installed with the pipeline for safety purposes?
Yes, we will have a telemetry system associated with the pipeline so that we can measure pressures, temperatures, and have leak detection associated with the pipeline.
Will the pipeline be subject to Department of Transportation safety regulations?
Once it is at its full capacity, it will be.
You indicated that this pipeline will provide access to markets for the crude produced in the Pronghorn Field. In the absence of the pipeline, is there a way to transport this oil and get it to market?
Without this pipeline, we would be trucking all of the oil out of the field, and for the equivalent of what this pipeline's capacity is, that would be about 273 trucks a day. Our intention with this pipeline is to try to get as many of those trucks off the road as possible.
And does that level of trucking, does that raise safety issues as well as annoyance and problems for landowners in the area?
Yes, the safety issues of having the trucks traveling on the roads, traffic accidents, dust raised and stirred up because of the truck traffic, those are all issues that we are trying to eliminate.
And can you tell the commission staff a little bit about the timing? When do you propose to begin construction of the pipeline?
We would like to begin construction on the pipeline within 2 to 3 weeks. And that is so that we can get the pipeline in before the winter season hits and we have to truck through the winter.
And do you anticipate the potential problems in constructing through the winter if approval is delayed to any substantial degree?
Yes, we do. The groundwater level has been high this year, and we are afraid that trying to construct through the winter will be expensive and much more time consuming to get through all of the frost layers and get the line constructed.
Nicole, I'm going to show you what we've marked as Exhibit 1 and ask if you can tell us what Exhibit 1 is.
Exhibit 1 is the Public Service Commission certification relating to order provisions transmission facility siting, and this is the signed copy by Rick Ross, the Whiting's VP of Operations.
And there is one change that was made on the front page of this, is that correct?
That's correct.
And can you just tell us what that change is?
Yes. Under item number 6, it says, Whiting understands and agrees that the pipeline will be buried to a minimum depth from the ground service to the top of the pipe of 48 inches in, and we have struck out Whiting and replaced it with the words rangeland. So once again, it will read pipe of 48 inches in rangeland.
And as I looked at the exhibit just now, I noticed that the tree and shrub mitigation specifications were omitted. So I'm just, with your concurrence, I'm going to add that to the exhibit. That is part of the official exhibit that was given to Mr. Ross for signing. Is that correct?
Yes, that is what was given to Mr. Ross.
And with that, we would offer Exhibit 1.
Okay.
Thank you. Well, it's two words, rangeland, not one word. Okay.
Two words.
Yeah.
I apologize.
No,
I think it might have been one word in the original, and that's how it might have gotten deleted. But
okay, Exhibit 1 is admitted.
And with that, Your Honor, I have no further questions of this witness.
Thank you, Mr. Morrison. Mr. Armstrong, do you have any questions of Ms. Tebow?
Yeah, a couple. Thank you. Ms. Tebow, you indicated that the pipeline, once at capacity, will be subject to the DOT regulations.
A clarification on that. Once all of the oil terminal that we are shipping from, because the oil pipeline goes from our oil terminal through this pipeline up to the Skunk Hill Bridger Lake tie-in. And so once that terminal goes into operation, it will be DOT jurisdictional.
Once oil starts flowing through it, it will be DOT jurisdictional.
Right. And because originally we are going to, we have the capability of pushing oil through the line from the well pads. And so through the oil terminal is a little bit behind in construction timing. And so the oil terminal is actually going to come online in the spring. And so we will be flowing oil through the pipeline prior to the oil terminal actually being operational.
So when that, is it going to be built to and operated to comply with the DOT regulations from day one?
That is correct. Everything is being built and will comply with the DOT regulations as of day one.
And that includes a spill response plan?
That includes the spill response plan, yes.
Is a spill response plan developed yet?
It is in the process of being developed currently.
Okay, but nothing will flow through there until that's in place?
No, that is correct.
Okay, thank you. What? I had a few questions on the terminal. You talked about the surface structures. Are there any surface structures at the terminal?
At our oil terminal,
yeah.
Surface structures, there will be a pipeline header where we have our pig receivers coming in from the field, and we will have the 20,000 barrel oil tank, and I'm trying to think what else. Of course, the pumps associated with that, some SCADA control, some control panels, things of that nature. There will be a block valve at that location as well.
And how does the, I guess, oil get to the terminal, if you will?
The oil gets to the terminal through Whiting's gathering system in the Pronghorn Field. At each well battery, there is a LACT unit. So once the oil is produced, it goes through the LACT unit and is then sent on through the gathering system to the oil terminal.
And so the oil terminal is going to be built in the spring?
It is under construction currently. It will be operational in the spring.
And that's what we're talking about as the Belfield Oil Terminal in the application?
The Whiting's Belfield Oil Terminal,
okay.
Correct.
Are you familiar with the route changes that were submitted, or is that more for the next witness?
I am familiar with the route changes.
What brought about the changes at the north end?
The north end, when we originally picked our route, all of the plans for the Skunk Hill facility, we didn't have access to all of the plans. Basically, it was still under 6 feet of snow, so we hadn't planned out the details of that site yet and worked with Bridger Lake on that. Once we were able to work out the plans with them, we realized that coming in, we were originally going to come into the east side of the facility. And it turns out that all of their pipelines and underground structure are coming in and out of the east side of the facility. And so for safety and also for cathodic protection purposes and maintenance activities, we decided it was a better choice to go around and come in the west side of the facility instead of crossing over all of the other underground structures.
What is the facility up there? On the maps, I guess I can't really see anything. I'm just curious. I mean, is it something you can see, or explain that to me a little bit, please?
The facility at Skunk Hill, it is owned by, well, I believe it's owned by Bridger Lake Pipeline, and we are, I believe they have an oil tank there, but we come in, and I'm not real familiar with all of Bridger Lake's facilities there at the site. I know that we come in, we tie into them, and then they have their choices of what to do with our oil.
And so was that a request by Bridger then for the change, or was
it? Yes,
it
was.
Okay. How will the pipeline be monitored when it's operational?
The pipeline will be monitored in accordance with DOT regulations 195 and the CPM requirements in terms of leak detection, the computational pipeline monitoring.
Is that done by Whiting itself, or is somebody else take care of that?
Yes, that is by Whiting.
Is that out of its offices in Colorado, or?
There will be people locally monitoring that, and with the support and backup of the people in Denver.
Before we move on, you asked about the two deviations. Were you going to ask about the beginning one too, or?
I think that one was more for Mr. Regan, but do you know what why the southern deviation occurred? If it's a better question for Mr. Regan, I can ask him.
Really, the southern deviation was also just a matter of this is where, when we finally got all of the details of our site figured out, it turns out that that's where the line was coming out of the facility instead of, I think it was a little bit further south. And so it was just a matter of detail of where, how it played into our site design.
And I assume Mr. Regan would be the person to ask about environmental questions, class one and class three reports and things of that nature. Is that correct?
He could probably answer your questions better. I am familiar with them, but he probably has the better answers.
Have you had communications with the landowners that the pipeline's going to cross?
Myself, not personally. However, our company has, and we've worked with the landowners. We have agreements already in place with all of the landowners.
Okay. So every landowner that the pipeline's proposed to cross has agreed, signed an easement or an option?
That's correct.
Have you had any objections from people in the area that you're familiar with?
No.
Would there be any trucks delivering oil to the terminal, or is it all going to be an underground gathering system?
I believe our truck terminal does have loading capabilities there, but that is not the intent. But I have to double check on that.
Do you know if it's, is it the plan to have mostly a gathering system or mostly trucks going to the terminal?
It would be, as far as I understand, the only trucks that would be going to the terminal would be something within the field related to Whiting.
Is there an idea of when the pipeline's going to reach capacity, or if it will reach capacity?
You know that? I don't know.
That's all the questions I have.
Mr. Fahn? Thank you, Mr. Armstrong.
I just have perhaps one. The Belfield Oil Terminal.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I was trying to figure out if that's an existing terminal.
No.
It is not.
No, it is not an existing terminal. It is a terminal that is being constructed.
How big is that terminal? I mean, how much land surface are we talking about?
Yeah, I don't have that information readily available.
It's 30 acres.
30 acres?
Okay.
Well, I'm trying to discern. You know, some applications that we get include a location like that. for siting, and I guess is that being included here in this siting application? Is that plot included? And
you talk about all the support facilities and.
Well, the at the Belfield Oil Terminal, you know, you have your gathering system coming together, meeting your transmission system, and so part of that site at least is associated with the transmission system, I would say, and I'm wondering if then that location for the oil terminal was included in the studies and, you know, environmental studies and the appointment studies.
Regan can probably answer better.
Right.
It's not being cited in the sense that there's not a specific request to cite it as an associated facility. It is within all the study areas and has been subject to all the studies and is prominently mentioned in the application and everything. So if the commission believes that it needs to be cited, we believe that you have the information available to cite it as part of this proceeding today, and it has been thoroughly studied.
But you're not asking us to cite?
No.
And, well, I guess it's a legal question. Why aren't you asking the commission to cite that? But
you know, the issue is in an associated facility, and you know, it's kind of, the associated facility is kind of a chicken and egg kind of story. I mean, I don't view it as something associated with the pipeline. Valves and risers, those kinds of things are associated facilities, pipeline associated facilities. You know, if the crude oil terminal is an associated facility, well, are the wells associated facilities? Are the gathering lines to the terminal associated facilities? And where do you stop? I mean, we believe it stops with the pipeline. And then incidental matters that are incidental facilities that are connected to the pipeline, it makes sense. But once you start moving upstream from that point, where do you really stop? And does it go all the way to the wellhead?
Yeah. I mean, you're asking for the valve, the pig valve at the end of it to be cited, aren't you?
Certainly. And that is shown on all the plats. And
there's a pressure. Is there a pressure increase along the way here?
Along the way?
I mean, well, at the oil terminal.
Ms. Tebow?
There will be a pump and a pressure increase at the facility.
And you mentioned the pump too, didn't you? Mentioned the pump as well when you were earlier in your discussion about facilities at that location.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
No further questions, Mr. Font?
No further questions.
All right, thank you. I think I just have one. Would you say, Ms. Tebow, that this is the pipeline's partially going through an existing corridor?
It is partially going through an already existing corridor with another pipeline. We tried to plan it that way to minimize disturbance.
And then along County Road right away?
Along also. County Road right away is correct.
Did you need to get any approvals for either of those from anyone? Or?
We have, I know in the county with the roads, we have worked with the county and with all of our crossings and in terms of the setback that the county requires, we've made sure to meet all of those and work with the roads on those lines. And then in terms of the right-of-way, I believe our right-of-way is adjacent to the other pipeline right-of-way. I know that we also we work closely with that other pipeline, so I don't think that this would be news to them.
How far are they apart? Or?
That I don't know for sure.
But anyway, they don't have a problem with how far it's apart, or?
No.
Judge, can I get one clarification?
Yeah, Mr. Armstrong.
When you're talking about the other pipeline, that's the Bridger pipeline?
Yeah. Yes, that is the Bridger pipeline.
Okay. think that's all the questions I have. Mr. Fong, did you have an additional one?
I do have one. I'm thinking that this might be a question for Bill Regan, but I'll ask.
Okay.
The construction right-of-way that you're talking about 80 feet
mm-hmm.
wide construction right-of-way. And the study corridor, the survey corridor was about 120 feet mm-hmm. wide. And I just wanted to clarify something about, I guess, on page 6 of the application. You don't necessarily have to turn there, but it talks about the pipeline route being defined as an 80-foot wide corridor.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be clear, I guess when the commission defines a route, when it designates a route, it's talking about the center line of the pipe. And so I see this as being your construction right of way, or rather than the pipeline route.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
That's all I have. Thank you.
And the 1 mile was the study corridor?
The 1 mile was the study corridor. Okay. Correct.
Okay.
And we'll have Mr. Regan testify as to those corridors and why they were chosen, what was done.
Okay. Anything further, staff?
Nothing further.
Thank you. Mr. Morrison, anything further this witness?
No further questions.
Thank you, Ms. Tebow.
Thank you.
And then Mr. Bill Regan is our next witness.
Mr. Regan, please. Regan or Reagan or?
Regan.
Regan, okay. Sorry, I've been mispronouncing.
That's okay, I'm used to it.
Mr. Morrison, please.
Thank you. Mr. Regan, would you state your name for the record, tell us by whom you're employed, in what capacity, and give us your business address, please.
Mm-hmm. My name is Bill Regan. I'm employed by an environmental consulting firm by the name of Merchant, Inc. That business address is 615 First Avenue Northeast in Minneapolis, Minnesota, suite number 6425, excuse me. Zip code is 55413.
And what's your occupation or your professional capacity with
yep.
Mergent?
Yep, my role at Mergent is I'm an environmental project manager. I assist pipeline companies like Whiting when they need to acquire permits for new expansions or maintenance projects, such as a PSC siting certificate.
And can you briefly review your educational professional background in environmental matters?
Yes. I have a Bachelor of Science in Biology from the University of Minnesota, the Twin Cities campus, in 1980. For the first 9 years of my career, I worked for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency in their water quality and solid waste divisions. And for the remaining 21 years of my career, I've been doing environmental project management work specifically with pipeline companies, helping them prepare environmental applications for expansion projects that are regulated at the state level and also at the federal level by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission.
And prior to your involvement in this particular project for Whiting, you previously testified before the commission and also prepared other applications for this commission, is that correct?
That is correct.
And you were primarily responsible for preparing the application in this matter?
And correct.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to show you what we've marked as Exhibit 2 and ask you to identify that.
Yes, Exhibit 2 is entitled Application of Whiting Oil and Gas for a Corridor Certificate and Route Permit, and that is the application document that I prepared on behalf of Whiting for this proceeding.
We would offer Exhibit 2.
No objection.
Exhibit 2 is admitted.
Bill, can you briefly review the methodology, in other words, how you approached this particular project, what area you looked at, and how you did the various studies and consultations within that area?
Certainly. On this particular project, as I started looking at the route provided by the Whiting personnel, we obtained the information electronically from Whiting and plot that information on our own GIS system to evaluate where the route crosses potential environmental features along the route, such as wetland areas or stream crossings or what look like maybe native prairie or grassland areas. From that, we develop what we call consultation maps that are then used as a base to prepare a request for comment letter for environmental resource issues that the pipeline may cross from several regulatory agencies in North Dakota, such as the Fish and Wildlife Service, the Game and Fish Department, the Park and Rec Department, and soliciting their opinion if the project route is going to be affecting or touching any sort of protected resource along its route. In addition to that, I also then did coordinate with another consulting firm in Bismarck, SWCA, who completed a biological resource along the construction right-of-way and an archaeological field study along the construction right-of-way, the 120-foot corridor study that was completed. Upon receiving the comment letters from the various agencies and also receiving the field survey survey report results from SWCA, that material is then compiled into the application document, and where issues were identified in either consultations or survey, those issues are talked about in the application and what the impact may be and what mitigation can be employed to minimize those impacts.
And can you describe for the commission the width of the or the size of the areas that you looked at, like your study corridor?
Right. The study corridor was set at a 1 mile wide corridor, 1/2 mile on either side of the center line of the pipeline. That was the width of the corridor that was used for writing to the agencies to solicit their comments on the project. Then the field survey corridor was set at 120 feet, which provides for a 20-foot buffer on either side of the 80-foot wide construction footprint of where the center line of the project will go. And that's the 120 feet of the field survey corridor was the area surveyed for wetlands, threatened endangered species, trees, any streams that are crossed, as well as archaeological resources in the area.
And Bill, before we talk about the specifics of the application, I'm going to have you identify just a few additional exhibits to get them on the record. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what Exhibit 3
is? Yes, Exhibit 3 is a map based on an aerial photograph base that shows where the pipeline route is in one color, and it does show two spots primarily where the slight adjustments were made to the route at the beginning and the end. These are the same aerial photo base doc maps that were produced or provided in the application. The intent of Exhibit 3 was to show the difference for where the slight route adjustment occurred on the land.
And then Exhibit 4?
Exhibit 4, showing the same type of information for the route, just showing it on a topographic map base as opposed to an aerial photograph map base.
And then finally, Exhibit 5.
Yes, Exhibit 5 are the civil survey plat drawings prepared by Whiting's survey contractor showing points of inflection, turns in the pipeline, property owners, and where road bores will occur.
And Exhibit 5, that's information that wasn't included in the original application, is that correct?
That is correct, that was not.
Mm-hmm. But all of these 3, 4, and 5 were filed with the commission several weeks ago.
That is correct.
We would offer Exhibits 3, 4, and 5.
Let me just take a quick look and make sure I've got them right. No objection for 3.
Thank you. So if I understand this right, basically 3 and 4 are amendments of previously documents submitted with the application?
That is correct. Those original documents were shown In the application under tab A, the
and five is new.
Five is new. That is correct. Yep.
Okay, 3, 4, and 5 are admitted.
Mr. Regan, based upon your past involvement in proceedings in North Dakota and the work you did in this case, are you familiar with North Dakota regulations and law relating to avoidance and exclusion areas in the siting of transmission facilities?
Yes, I am.
And that's one of the things you were looking then in your review as to whether or not this particular line would affect any avoidance or exclusion areas, is that correct?
That's correct.
And does it?
It does not, no.
Are there in fact any avoidance or exclusion areas located within the corridor itself? And by the corridor now, I'm talking about your 1 mile.
Right.
It's a corridor that you looked just for information on.
Right. The only avoidance area that showed up within the 1 mile study area was one plot of CRP land, which is not affected, and the pipeline route itself does not cross. The actual location of the CRP land is about 1/3 of a mile to the east from near where the pipeline ends, where it joins the Bridger facility.
You mentioned that you did consultations, and these are with a number of state and federal agencies, is that correct?
That's correct.
And can you summarize the consultations that you had, maybe just mention the agencies you consulted with and whether any of those agencies had any substantial concerns about this project?
Certainly. Starting maybe from the top with the federal agency list, one of the typical consultation requests we send in is to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And we did receive a response letter back from the Fish and Wildlife Service where they concurred that the project would not have any effect on listed threatened or endangered species. They did provide some other language and comments about some concerns that they had with regard to potential eagle nests in the area. I drafted language in the application where we took issue with some of the comments that were in the Fish and Wildlife comment letter because the letter appears to be a canned cut and paste letter from another project, and it references geographic areas that aren't a part of this project. And for the eagle issue that they brought up in particular, there are no eagle nesting trees, so the issues that they bring up in the letter do not seem germane to us. They also talked about some concerns with regard to migratory bird and clearing of the right-of-way and construction delaying into the spring of next year, which could cause a disturbance to some birds. We also did not find that letter was germane or applicable to this project, as the timing of the project is scheduled to occur in the fall, which is the ideal time frame to build a pipeline for nesting bird concerns, which is typically in the spring, May and June part of the months, where they're breeding and nesting on the ground. With regard to state level threatened and endangered species consultations, we asked for comments from the North Dakota Game and Fish Department and the North Dakota Parks and Rec Department. Neither one of those agencies identified any issues with the project route. The state SHPO's office, State Historic Preservation Office, did provide a comment letter addressing the survey report completed by SWCA and concurred with SWCA's recommendations that the route would not affect any sites listed as potentially eligible for listing on the National Register of Historic Places. We did consult with the USDA for prime farmland in the area, or CRP land, Conservation Reserve Program land, or Wetland Reserve Program land, WRP lands, and the project route did not cross either one of those special land classes either.
None of the three, you mentioned three, prime farmland, CRP, and WRP.
Right, right. The route itself did not cross those. That's where we identified that within the corridor, the 1 mile wide corridor, there was a parcel of CRP land, but just not crossed by the route.
Bill, in your opinion, will this proposed pipeline have any adverse impact on wildlife resources in the area?
It will not, in my opinion.
And any impact on migratory birds and like that will be mitigated by construction during the fall season, is that correct?
That's correct, correct, yep.
I think Fish and Wildlife also raised a concern about the whooping cranes, and Whiting has agreed that if a whooping crane is seen in the area, you will cease construction within 1 mile until the whooping crane leaves the area.
Yes, that's correct. That's a standard Fish and Wildlife comment.
And the studies that SWCA did and that SHPO reviewed, there were no cultural issues impacted by this proposed pipeline? Were
That's correct.
In fact, I think the new site they found was some kind of an auto parts dump ground of some sort.
Yep, a few parts left over from an old automobile at the bottom of a hill.
And that was found to be not significant.
Yes.
What about wetlands? Are there any significant wetlands in the route?
There are two wetlands that are crossed by the route that Whiting has agreed to complete a horizontal directional drill underneath to avoid them. There's one other wetland on the west side of the route that Whiting's construction corridor will not be touching. And just to provide another buffer to protect that wetland, orange construction fencing will be put up to keep equipment from wandering off the right-of-way at that location.
And are there any trees or wooded areas that will be impacted by this route?
There are two locations of natural seeded tree clumps, of which the construction corridor will require removing a few trees. I don't recall the exact number, somewhere between like 5 and 10 trees. Whiting has agreed to replace those trees at the 2-to-1 ratio. There is one location where the route will be crossing a intentionally planted windbreak tree row, and Whiting has agreed to complete a directional drill underneath that tree road to avoid impacting any of those trees.
And Bill, you mentioned Exhibits 3, 4, and 5 earlier, and there were some minor realignments of the route or adjustments of the route. And I think Ms. Thibault discussed at least the northernmost in her testimony. Can you tell the commission staff why the southernmost adjustment was made, and that's the one that's shown on the first page of Exhibit 3?
I can certainly comment on that. I don't know that I can be more exacting than Ms. Thibault's comments. It's my understanding that the location for the start of the pipeline was shifted south to make it an easier transition for the pipes coming out of the oil terminal. So the whole beginning, two-tenths of a mile of the beginning of the route was shifted slightly to the south about 80 feet, just to make it a smoother alignment where the discharge pipe comes out of the oil terminal area. Then there's another section of the route, about 2.5 miles in length, where it first proceeds northerly on the west side of a county road. The alignment of that portion of the route was shifted to the west 10 feet, and that was to achieve a 100-foot separation distance between the center line of the county road and the center line of the pipeline, which was a requirement of the county highway department. And then the final and third route alignment piece was the location at the north end where the route was rerouted around the outside perimeter of the Bridger pipeline facility to come into the Bridger facility from a western approach as opposed to the southern and eastern approach.
Bill, in your opinion, are the proposed facilities of such length, design, location, or purpose that they will produce minimal adverse effects?
That is correct. I believe that. Yes.
And in your opinion, they will produce those minimal adverse effects on the environment, natural resources, and upon the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota. Is that correct?
That is correct.
In your opinion, are these proposed facilities compatible with environmental preservation and the efficient use of resources?
Yes, they are.
And will the proposed locations minimize adverse human and environmental impact while ensuring continuing system reliability and integrity, ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion?
Yes, they will.
I don't have further questions to the witness at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Morrison. Mr. Armstrong, please.
Yes. Mr. Regan, I, I have some questions. I'm seeking a little bit of clarification as a result of the route changes and I guess what Whiting's asking for. And so if I'm going to kind of clarify my question so you know where I'm coming from. So correct me if I say something that's inaccurate. As I understand the Class 3 in the wildlife and wetland studies, they were a 120-feet study corridor.
That's correct.
And was that based on the center line of the route before or after the route changes?
That was based on the center line of the route in the initial planning stages, well before the changes occurred.
Okay, so now just taking like the south end, as I believe you testified, was moved 80 feet south. Has that study corridor been, or has there been additional studies through that additional area for there?
There has not been an additional field study completed along that two-tenths of the route. That area was included in the request for comments from the agencies, but in terms of an actual on-the-ground field study, new field work was not done at that location. At the location where it shifted 80 feet to the south, it would have been very close to the outside edge of the original 120-foot wide survey that did occur. And from looking at the existing land use within the areas being primarily agricultural land, that didn't strike me as a large enough change to warrant commissioning an additional field survey to look at that two-tenths of a mile.
So are we asking for the route on this from 120 feet or I guess are we being asked for this route to go from the center line of the original route or from the route with the proposed changes?
Oh, I see your point. It should be on the aerial photo map, if you're looking at that on page one, what we're asking for is the red line.
Exhibit three, correct?
Of exhibit three, that is correct. So it would be the revised route.
And then that would be the same, you know, for the, I believe the pipeline shifted 10 feet to the west if you go north along that county road until you reach Billings County.
Right, that is correct. Yep, so the same situation there. And in that particular about 2 1/3 mile stretch, the shift is so minor, being 10 feet, that my eye can't pick out the difference that the orange and the red are right on top of each other there, but there is an orange and red line in there together.
And then at the north end, then there's how much further, so to speak, does that route change make the pipeline?
The pipeline starts to veer off toward the end of the line to create a general arcing curve where it meets up against the property section line. And at its furthest point away out from the original corridor, it moves out to about 300 to 400 feet. I'm not sure the exact dimension as it traces the outside of the Bridger facility that, unfortunately, because of the date of my aerial photo, the Bridger facility doesn't show up on this photograph, which would help if that were the case to see how the route of the Belfield line goes around the perimeter of the Bridger facility.
And was there a Class 3 cultural resources or wildlife study conducted for this part of the route?
There was no additional new Class 3 or wildlife survey done along that portion of the route. In my opinion, I didn't believe that follow-up survey work was necessary because it's occurring, one, in an agricultural field, and then secondly, it's moving around the perimeter of an already developed site, that being the Bridger Station.
And that's what I'm trying to get a handle on here, I guess, is, you know, is this a farmed field all around it?
That is correct, yes.
For this deviation starting where it starts to curve and then it goes over and then it's got a straight 90 degree north?
Right, yep. It's all agricultural land, farm field.
And what type of facility does Bridger have there?
I'll have to defer to someone else for that answer. In general, I know it's a pump station facility because that's where their pipeline runs in and out of the facility. You can see the scar of the Bridger pipeline moving up to the north and right-hand side of the page in the section next to where the tie-in is shown on the map. But I don't know the exact details of the facilities at the Bridger station.
Is it your understanding that there's no wetlands in this area, the area to the north?
At the location where it's tying into the Bridger facility, yes, that is correct. And if there were wetlands in the area, they are indicated on this aerial topographic map. If you look toward the outside ring of the yellow dashed line, mm-hmm. you'll see wetlands shown in with a light blue diagonal line. So those are wetlands identified on the National Wetland Inventory maps, and they're primarily associated with oxbow areas of the creek that meanders through the area.
Okay, so we can tell at least for the south change and then the 10-foot change going north and the change at the top that there's no wetlands by the route changes?
That's correct, yes.
And as far as wildlife, I guess I kind of assume, and tell me if I'm wrong, the wildlife is generally kind of the same in the area?
That was my thinking, yes, is that the wildlife is the same and it'll be common wildlife associated with agricultural areas, deer, squirrels, songbirds.
For this, and I apologize for jumping back and forth, but for the south change, at least the new pipeline is within the study corridor, but some of the, I guess, part of the right-of-way would end up ultimately having to be outside of the study corridor, wouldn't it?
Outside of the field study corridor.
Yes, the
that
field
is
corridor.
Correct. Yes, Yes, yep, but still within the desktop review corridor.
The 1 mile. The 1 mile.
The 1 mile corridor, yes. Right.
So you didn't find anything on the class one in there, but there was no field study.
That is correct. The class one archaeology search did not identify anything significant for past sites or studies completed anywhere within the study corridor, the 1 mile corridor.
What's the land use for that southern change? Do you know?
It is, I don't know the specific land use myself right now, but my interpretation of it is that it would be agricultural from seeing the crop row showing up on the aerial photograph.
Well, and I guess the original route is discussed in the SWCA report and referred to it as agriculture, I believe. And
right.
You have any reason to believe it would be different than?
I do not, no. The SWCA report documented that about 75% of the route is active agricultural farmland, and then remaining portions are kind of undeveloped, well, or currently undeveloped rangeland, which you can see some of that area shows up on the aerial photo map around the milepost one area where the meandering streams wander through the area. Those are typically the areas where farmers have not developed them as much as higher ground elevations.
While we're talking about that south one, that's where the Belfield Oil Terminal site is?
That's correct.
And I just want to be clear, as I understand what the application is seeking, it's not seeking PSC siting for the entire 30 acres of the Belfield terminal. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes.
It's seeking, well, as it's indicated in Exhibit 5 on page 1, I guess would it be the area within those dotted lines?
Yeah, that's correct. It's the area within the dotted line, starting specifically at the boundary from where the Belfield Oil Terminal rectangular box is drawn. Okay. So that's considered the beginning part of the pipeline.
But not where the not the entire rectangle box, just the dotted lines within that box?
That's correct.
And the dotted lines within that box would be the part that's had the field surveys conducted on?
That is correct, yep.
I Taking you to the north route deviation, or route change, I apologize. The north route change, explain to me how, I guess, we can be assured that there's no impact to cultural resources for that change.
Whiting could submit a follow-up request letter to the state SHPWA's office asking them if they have any follow-up concern regarding this one route change portion of the line. That would be one way to gain some assurance for that. As a consultant working with regulatory agencies, I sometimes weigh whether every individual little change on a project route is necessary to submit to an agency, just because I know they do receive a lot of requests for project reviews. And as I look at the project, if it's in the same geographical kind of setting under the same land use, and if there are no similar resources identified in previous portions of the route, I believe it's a fair conclusion to assume that a slight other change will not have any associated resource impacts with it. But
do you? I'm kind of wondering is if Bridger's work in the area maybe had a class three in that area or not. Do you know?
I'm afraid I don't know. I don't know anything of the history about their facility. The one thing that I think can help also bear on the interpretation of what's happening at the Bridger line is that whole parcel of land is now developed by Bridger. So it's not like it's an undeveloped piece of land anymore. There are current pipeline facility structures on there, and so the area would have been graded and dug up, which...
Is it okay if I approach, Judge?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And I just wanted you to maybe show me then where kind of you're comfortable where you're developed by Bridger. I can see in the map where it comes off to the northeast where you're talking earlier.
Right.
Can you maybe show me?
Yes. The portion I'm referring to is kind of enclosed by a red box, if the lines of the box would be continued around. If you look at Exhibit 5, the very last page, page 17 of 17 of the plat documents, this is the location that's owned and operated by Bridger, and you can see where the proposed Whiting line comes into the northwest corner of the Bridger property. So Bridger has completely developed this parcel of land. So from an environmental review standpoint, in my mind, it doesn't warrant conducting another review on an area once it's already been in the developed stage.
Well, actually, don't the last three pages of Exhibit 5 kind of show all that even a little better?
They do. They show where it approaches the property and then where it goes around the property. And it's on three pages because it touches three different landowners.
Right.
So, kind of skirts around.
And so then the area to the west of that rectangle box on page 17 of 17 of Exhibit 5, is my understanding from your testimony earlier, is active agricultural land, being farmed?
That is correct, active agricultural, yep.
wonder if we could maybe take about a two-minute break and let me visit with the witness and with Whiting representatives, and maybe we have a way to address this whole issue of the cultural surveys and just alleviate the concerns. And
yeah, I think.
And if you want to get some more questions ready in the meantime, that's fine too.
Sure, let's take a 2 to 5 minute recess here.
Thank you.
Go off the record.